And I had a hangover the next day, and I didn't remember where I had put the money. I forgot where I had put it. Ouch. And that would have to pay over $1,000. That was in 1980. That's a lot of money in the 80s. The weather was hot at that time. I wanted to make lemonade. And there was heavy pitchers at that time. Oh, there's the money. Oh. So that was a great relief. Every day I would go to the deaf club. I would drunk drive. Police would stop me. And I would say, hold on a minute. I have my home is like 2-3 blocks away. And I would ask the cop to drive me home. And the cop did. He would drive me home. No ticket, no DUI. I never went to jail. Not yet, I should say. Not yet. Always would drive drunk. Would go from the bar to home, Connecticut, New York. I would drunk drive all around those states. I was very emotional. I would have fights. I would have girlfriends fighting, and they would always leave me. I was a very angry person at that time. I worked at the VA hospital. My coworker, who sat next to me, could smell my breath. Ooh. And my coworker looked at me and said, "How many drinks have you had or did you have last night?" And I said, "I don't know." He asked me, "Can you drink a glass of beer in one night? And I said, sure, yeah, I can do it. I can do that. I went to a bar after work. I went to a bar, of course. And I drank one glass of beer. And I got drunk. So my coworker asked me, "You drank one glass of beer? How big was that glass?" And I said, "Oh, it was a glass pitcher. A very large pitcher. That was my one glass of beer." So, of course, I was drunk. It wasn't more than one glass, right? Right. So, I was trying to save money. I was always broke. A lot of friends would tell me, "You have a problem. You have a drinking problem." They would tell me over again, and I would deny it over and over again. I did use drugs. I don't want to talk about that, but I used alcohol, and I want to talk about that here. So they would tell me, you have a problem with drinking. So I would try to kill myself. Of course, it didn't work. I went to a bar. I started drinking. I was very sad and drinking and talking to myself. I was actually talking to the beer. I was saying farewell to the beer. Bye-bye, you know. And you know how they have the glass mirror behind the bar? I was saying goodbye to the beer. And the next day, I started drinking again. It was just a daily repeat of that same farewell. I did steal my mother's drinking, her liquor too. She was also an alcoholic. My cousin sent me a letter about the Alcohol Institute, the drug program for the deaf there. And that was in Cape Cod. I didn't know. I said, no, I'm not one of those. And my friend, another friend, invited me to go to a party. I noticed that the people around the party, they were wasting their alcohol because there was a keg at the party. And I thought, this is going to waste. I wanted to drink the whole thing for everybody at the party. Why not? Then I went to the hospital. I got in an accident. I hit three cars. I hit the trees. I almost killed myself. I was very swollen. I woke up. I couldn't remember anything. They asked me, what happened? Tell me what happened. I said, I don't remember anything. They said, you hit three cars, parked cars, and you hit a tree. And I made up some sort of artwork for the cop. Tried to draw it out for the cop. The cop came to my house, knocked on the door, and my mother pointed to the door, and I was still drunk. I opened the door in front of the cop. I opened the door. He gave me a summons. I said, okay, whatever, and I put it on the table. The next day, I opened it. Oh, I have to go to court. I was freaking out. I contacted my lawyer, and the lawyer helped me. I went to court, and it was canceled, continued, because there was no interpreter to go to the court. They said, one more, and we'll just dismiss the whole thing. And then the interpreter showed up, and I said, who was the judge? A woman. Oh, a woman judge, no problem. And the lawyer said, no, she's going to send you to jail. So I started shaking in my shoes. The judge asked the cop what caused the accident. And he said, I don't know. And I told the judge a lie. I said my van brakes didn't work. They weren't working. They caused me to have an accident. So 1 month later, I received a check, a huge check, from the auto insurance company. Woo-hoo, I had dollar signs in my eyes. I went to the bank, and the clerk, the bank teller, she said, you're lucky your van didn't hit my house, because right behind the tree was her home, the bank teller's home. And I felt very small, embarrassed, guilty, and I left. And where did I go? To the bar. The same thing. I started drinking again. I was on crutches. I went home. As soon as I let the crutches go, I fell on my face. I was very, very disappointed in myself. I felt lost. I felt I didn't have any motivation to do anything. I didn't have any friends. They all abandoned me. They left me. My family didn't want to be around me. I made the decision to go to that program. And I learned. I didn't feel good at all. I wasn't at the acceptance stage myself. There was something about step one, admitting I was powerless over alcohol. And my life was very unmanageable. I thought, no, my life is not unmanageable. I have a job, I have a car. No, my life is fine. Then step two came along. I did not like it. Because God telling me what to do? Oh, no way. I want my way. I didn't want to go AA's way. It didn't work. My way didn't work. I still relapsed. I moved to Rochester, New York for college. There's a school there. I went to a program in Rochester, New York to explain to me clearly, and I still was not accepting step two, period. I wanted my way. And finally got sober. 6 years. For 6 years, I was sober. I didn't go to any AA meetings during that time. I would prefer not to have a sponsor. It's none of my, none of their business. I had my own, personal program. And then somehow, when my mother passed away, in an instant, she was asleep and then she was gone. It was very unexpected, and my grief just all came back. On New Year's Eve, friends introduced me to a new kind of whiskey. I tasted it, just a little taste, and of course, my relapse continued for 11 years after that. I was so disappointed. I wanted to hang myself, but I failed. Because the plywood was very thin. I tried to hang myself, the plywood broke. So, oh, I drove. I was thinking I could drive into the river. I don't know how to swim. I wanted to die. But I ended up going back on the highway. I would try and try to kill myself, and I failed every time. I moved here to San Diego from Iowa. I relapsed there in Iowa, but I moved here to San Diego. It was May of 1998. I still was drinking. I wasn't happy. I was still very disappointed in myself. I was very, very angry because I had PTSD. While I lived at the institute, the school for the deaf, though the staff really were very abusive to me, from 4 years old to 17 years old, during that whole time. They would spank me, and then at the end, the teacher would take a big piece of wood, and swat me. Then I said, come on, give me some more. I'm really enjoying it. Come on, give me some more. I was used to it. I felt like I was no good. My friend told me that the Signs of Life program, they had a position, a job. I was looking for a job. And I said, okay. So I went to Signs of Life, the SOL program. I said, I'm here for a position, for a job. And the director of SOL said, oh, I've heard your name. You have a problem with drinking and drugs, too. I was like, oh, shit. My friend has a big mouth. Oh, and so I was accepted into that program, Signs of Life. I felt shame. I felt guilty, disgusted for a very, very long time. I told them, who am I? I'm disappointed. I'm deaf, for one thing. I'm always alone, isolated. The deaf people, the deaf community weren't interested in hanging out with me. Number two, I'm gay. And I was very skinny at that time. I felt I was so ugly. So she suggested to me to go to the meetings. I went to LLAC. They had a gay and lesbian and trans group there. I would go, and I was actually looking for a date. I went actually for myself. I was not looking for any sex or anything like that. So I was talking to some people about AA, their ways to change your life. I told them, No, this is all bullshit. I'm not accepting step two. The other person said, go find a sponsor. Go. Go find your sponsor. I was like, So I found a sponsor. A Mexican guy. He didn't speak English. But we could communicate somehow. With home sign. It worked, I tell you, it worked. He did explain to me clearly step two. I got it. I finally understood clearly for a long time. From 1981 to 1999, I finally got it from just the gestures and finally he moved and I found a very good sponsor. I'm really grateful for that. I understand that I am powerless over alcohol. I'm sick. I realized my life was, yes, very unmanageable. No matter that I was a functional or dysfunctional, I am accepting 100%. Let me tell you about step two. My sponsor and AA are my higher power. In this whole universe, I believe. Step three, I'm not a religious person. I'm not a Christian. So they told me to get down on my knees and pray. I said, no, no, I'm very sensitive. No, no, no. And they said, go to the bathroom. Get on your knees. I put a towel down and I sat and I started laughing and laughing. I was just laughing and laughing, but it worked. It worked. It worked for me. I was like, wow. I remember we always would lie, right? Everybody, all of us, we're alcoholics. We lie. I had to work on step four. Step four. I preferred not to say everything. I would just say little at a time. And my sponsor said, no, tell me everything, the whole thing. What I did to hurt others. And I had to write it all down. Oh, fears. I had to write it all down. Sex. Woo. Okay. A lot of that. And others I harmed. I put everybody's names down. I asked and prayed for my character defects to be removed. Asked for forgiveness for my mistakes. Wow. It took me some time. Step nine. I flew to Massachusetts and confronted and apologized, made amends. But there were a lot of friends who are gay in that area. They were already gone. That hurt. Ouch. But I had to go and to my school, to the reunions. I was very scared because they called me the drunkard. And I met with them and they told me, you look healthy, you look better, stay that way. And I was thankful to them. One person asked everybody, come on, let's go to a bar. Come on, let's go. And she didn't ask me. And that's okay. I prefer to go to a meeting. I went to a meeting. They had an interpreter there. I went and I was happy with that my AA family. So I've met many people. I've met a lot of people. If I make a mistake, I quickly admit it and I apologize. I make amends. I remember I do an inventory annually. Step 1, 2, and 3 work every day, daily. I have some beautiful art of Bali in Africa, and I look at that, and I meditate, and I pray every night. I just calm my mind. I've joined the Deaf Recovery Community. There's a website. It's a closed group. It's not public. It's a closed group. And I can contact other deaf alcoholics all over the United States and Canada. We contact each other and share. Step 12, we carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I was working as a counselor for 19 years. It was my time to retire. I retired last February. I thought I would be very relaxed, not a care in the world, but they asked me to be sponsor other deaf alcoholics, and I do. I still do. I help. I'm of service. Because my sobriety comes first. That's an important key for me. We are growing in the deaf community, the deaf alcoholism community. I remember the past. In 1999, when I joined AA, July 25th of 1999, there were no interpreted signs, or the interpreters weren't that good. Oh, I was so frustrated. I needed an interpreter for my sobriety, my recovery. If there was no interpreter, I would have been gone. And how it works, I work through the Accessibility Committee. I used to be chair of the Accessibility Committee for AA. I would contact different groups, and I would go to the groups and carry the message. And it works. Really, it's been a great benefit. Last January, I found out that I have prostate cancer, T7. It means stage 2. It's a pretty aggressive cancer. I decided to go on vacation. Took off with my husband. We went to Canada, Niagara Falls, beautiful, very meditative place. I went to Vermont. I went to visit Bill W.'s birthplace. The hotel, it was beautiful. I visited the grave. Oh, I had goosebumps. I visited his wife, Lois's grave site. It was beautiful. I said thank you to Bill W. for establishing AA with Dr. Bob. And I did visit Dr. Bob's in a place in Akron, Ohio. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. I went to see my niece for her 50th birthday. She didn't know I was coming. She didn't know I would be there. She was in shock to see me there. Oh, we had a really good time. We enjoyed ourselves. I watched the people drinking, and I didn't partake. My niece always said, oh, he doesn't drink. He doesn't drink. I said, don't worry, you go ahead and drink. You go ahead and drink. It's not my issue. Then I smelled something. What is that? Oh, I found out. I have 4 marijuana plants about that big. And I said, oh, I'm not going anywhere near that. I got to back off. And I'm glad my husband was with me. We're both sober. So I said, let's go. We enjoyed the night. September 25th, I had my surgery to remove the cancer, and I'm thankful. I prayed. Everything went away clean. I'm clean at this point. Because, thank you. I'm clean of the cancer. The doctor said, he said, I can't say cancer-free, per se, because cancer can come back, you know. It's the same idea. Am I alcohol-free? No. I am an alcoholic, one day at a time. Just pray, meditate. What time?
You got
10,
15 minutes.
Okay. Let me go back a little bit. So, okay. I plan to go to the AA International Convention in Detroit, Michigan. I already reserved my hotel, registered. I tried to reserve the hotel downtown, but oof, it was already all sold out. I was like, hey, I'm going to be at an airport hotel, and that's fine. I'm not going to fly there, though. I'm going to drive. So total is going to be about 4,000 miles round trip. I'm going to visit the historical areas around there. I'm going to plan to stop in Ohio, Akron again, to visit Dr. Bob's grave again. It'll be my third time. It's beautiful. If I remember when I was new, when I was a newcomer, in 1981, not 98, but back in 1981, I would volunteer to wash the ashtrays. Remember those big ashtrays? I would wash all of them. That was my service work. And remember, we used to smoke in churches. It was very foggy with a cloud of cigarette smoke a long time ago. Ooh, the ashtrays. I complained having to wash them. So I quit. But then coming back to 1999, they recommended that I sweep. So I would sweep, and that was my service work. I would clean the coffee, make the coffee, clean the coffee pots. And then I would set up a deaf AA meeting. And I would bring people in. The deaf AA groups would close and not have enough people to come because they wouldn't follow the 12-step. There was so much over control. There was drama. There was gossip. No anonymity. I decided to learn about the 12 traditions myself. And I set up working with the 12 traditions and follow the 12 traditions. And it works. It works for the group. For about 12 years now, we've had that deaf AA group. It's been great. We have an interpreter for not the deaf people, but for the hearing people. Not for the deaf people, for the hearing people. Because the deaf people have the meeting. Whenever there's hearing people, and we welcome hearing people to come in, we have the interpreter for the hearing. You want to learn and share with us. We want to share with you. Okay. I guess that's it. That's it. Thank you very much.